good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, September 18, 2014. Experts say China-South Sudan relations could help foster peace in the country.
But in a case like this, where the civil war is going on, China cannot help be concerned with what it will take to end the civil war. And what it will take to end the civil war is a major political agreement and transformation.
And teachers are introducing peace skills into South Sudan's school curriculum.
When they want to correct each other, the way they're correcting each other is also not like before, not in a rough way. They are becoming so assertive.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The recent government directives instructing companies to replace foreign workers with qualified nationals has sparked a lot of discussion about why the jobless rate among South Sudanese is so high. There is criticism that many unemployed workers think certain jobs are beneath them. But as VOA fellow Lucy Pony found out, some South Sudanese say they are ready to do any job for survival.
Andrew Chol drives a motorcycle taxi, also known as Boda Boda, for his livelihood. He says foreigners are taking up every job around, including his Boda Boda business. He says there are more Boda Boda riders now than the people living here in Bor. Chol says everyone has invested in the Boda Boda business. He says Ugandans have come back after being told to leave this job last year, and now he says it's overcrowded. Jokudu Caroline, a primary school teacher in Juba, says many educated youth are unemployed because they all think they deserve office jobs, and when they are not offered one, they refuse to look for casual jobs.
I think most of the South Sudanese are refusing that kind of job is because, one, they think that this work of being a waitress, a cook, a workman is only for people who are educated. Okay, the thing that once they have gone to school, what definitely they want is to have that college job, to be in the office and work in the office.
Philip Makwach, a retail trader in Bor, Jonglei State, says he used to prefer other jobs as opposed to casual work, but he says that's changed because office jobs are hard to come by.
If there's some jobs so that I can get money like messenger, I can afford it, so that will save my life. Yeah, it's a good thing to chase the government, to chase the foreigners away, because the big position will be for our citizens. And if, take example, like in Uganda and Kenya, there's no Sudanese who is working there as a secretary, as a human resource, as what?
Lual Kweth is a builder in Bor. He says people should not have job preferences. Kweth believes it is the citizens' responsibility to build their own country. Kweth says he builds long towers, not only small buildings. He says South Sudanese like him know this work and he doesn't think a foreigner can do it. Nobody can take over building our country. We have to build it, he says. He says he wants the government to make sure that the country is built by the citizens themselves. Gale Emmanuel Thompson is a hotel cook in Juba. He says the society is largely to blame for the high jobless rate. He says parents encourage their children to study and become only managers and executives and to despise other jobs.
When you work as a watchman or a cleaner, socially these are works that once you tell somebody, like maybe your wife, that you are working as a cleaner, the first thing is the why are you working in such a work? It is not good. How can the whole of you work as a cleaner? This alone will just discourage because of the society aspect.
The government of South Sudan has not provided any unemployment statistics since 2008. Oxfam says unemployment rates are very high, with only 12% of women and 11% of men within the population formally employed. At all levels of income, women earn lower wages than men. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony.
Philip Aleu in Bor and Waki Simon Wudu in Juba contributed to this report. South Sudan and its partners are beginning to introduce life skills and peace studies in schools across the country, believing it will better prepare the nation's children to peacefully coexist. For VOA News, Mungome Debs Rakarinj has this story from Juba.
Viola Pony, a teacher at Juba's Friendship Secondary School, says she's pleased with her students' behavioral responses to classes on life skills and peace studies, which were introduced a year ago as part of a pilot project.
When they want to correct each other, the way they're correcting each other is also becoming so not like before, not in a rough way. They are, they are becoming so assertive. So, this issue of anger, you see, sometimes they don't show much like before. This is the changes that I've seen in my students.
Pony says she has introduced the studies in her region classes. Elizabeth Keji, who teaches English at Nalmodo Secondary School, says instead of going home after school, she teaches life skills and peace studies to students who want to take the additional classes.
They even ask, why don't they include the subject from the beginning of the year? Because we start it in the middle, it's not in the timetable, so we are doing it outside the class. So they are asking, why don't we put it in the timetable so that they could learn from the classroom?
KG says her students learn things like personal attributes, strength and weaknesses. They are also taught lessons like personal health and hygiene, preserving the environment, cultural diversity, and peaceful coexistence.
They are happy when they hear of knowing themselves, who they are, knowing the culture of other people, knowing the values, the respect. So they're really happy of those topics.
Pony is one of more than 70 South Sudanese teachers attending a one-week workshop in Juba on how to incorporate these life studies into the national curriculum. Her school is among the 48 selected from the 6 counties of Yambio in Western Equatoria, Yeyan Juba in Central Equatoria, Tonji East in Warab State, Wau in Western Bahar Ghazal, and Nazir in Upper Nile States. They involve pre-primary, primary, secondary, and tertiary institutions as part of the pilot project. Therima Majeta is the Life Skills and Peace Building Manager at the South Sudan United Nations Child Agency. She says the information a child absorbs at a young age makes a big impact on the way he or she interacts with others. Majeta says that is important in a multi-ethnic country like South Sudan.
There is a certain knowledge that a child needs for them to be able, for instance, to break certain prejudices or to break certain stereotypes. You need to be provided with certain knowledge. For instance, am I given knowledge that says I should hate other people? Or am I given knowledge that says I should have tolerance?
Stanislas Luwala is the Inspector of Youth Training in the National Ministry of Youth and Culture.
I see that there is a future. If we learn life skills, those little skills of communication, problem solving and creative thinking and critical thinking and the other skills, I'm sure we can stand by our own as a nation, and this will be a chance for us to build South Sudan.
Luwala says the Ministries of Education and Youth and Culture are working with UNICEF and other partners to ensure that skills development and peace studies are introduced in South Sudanese schools as part of the class curriculum. For VOA News, I am Mugume Desu Rakarinj in Juba.
China has long major stake in the backbone of South Sudan's economy, the country's oil. Up until now, most of China's activity in South Sudan has been oil-related. But since the violence broke out in December, Beijing has taken on a different role in South Sudan, as VOA fellow Nabil Biagio found out.
Sudanese political analyst Mehdi Al-Jazuli is a fellow at the Rift Valley Institute. He says China's role in South Sudan may be changing, but the chief concern of the Chinese is still protecting their oil investments.
The oil industry is getting a feel of the war, which wasn't the case during the civil war, really, when it didn't really, war around it didn't really prevent production. But now production is down or halted, and obviously this is a reason for the Chinese to be concerned.
Even if Chinese troops are deployed as peacekeepers in South Sudan, they are likely to be guarding oil fields in Bantiu and Upper Nile State, in which Chinese companies have an interest, Al-Jazuli says. He says China is expanding its presence in South Sudan because the conflict is being fought in the oil-producing parts of the country.
So nobody is really able to carry weight in the battlefield. And the battlefield in this sense means strictly the oil fields. The Chinese wouldn't be concerned if the battlefield away from the oil fields are contested. This doesn't matter. But what matters is that the oil fields themselves now are a point of contestation. You must recognize that Bentiu and Malakal have been shifting hands between rebel and government for some time.
Al-Jazuli says China would side with either President Kiir's government or rebels in South Sudan, depending on which side controls the oil fields. But in general, he says China takes the side of the incumbent government. Analyst Abraham Awalich is a researcher at the Juba-based think tank, the Sud Institute. He thinks China can play a positive role and help bring peace to South Sudan. One angle it could take to do that would be to exert influence on South Sudan's northern neighbor, Sudan, to get the two countries to cooperate.
China has a good relationship with both countries. So I think China is also able to create some understanding between both countries to make sure that they respect the cooperation agreement, which brings the oil into equation. So that is another level that Chinese are providing, and they are supporting the IGAD peace process.
South Sudanese oil transits through Sudan to export ports, where most of it goes to China. A dispute 2 years ago between Khartoum and Juba over oil transit fees led South Sudan to stop production for 14 months. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
A former U.S. career diplomat says the Chinese involvement in South Sudan is a good move towards peace and stability. Princeton Lyman, who now serves as a senior advisor to the president of the United States Institute of Peace, says the United States disagrees with China's domestic policies and its arms trade with Sudan and South Sudan, but applauds China's recent engagement with the African Union and other regional blocs to end the violence in South Sudan. He says China's presence in Sudan and South Sudan is nothing new.
Now, previously, the Chinese envoy did not attend negotiating sessions between Sudan and South Sudan, but he has been present during the negotiations to end the civil war in South Sudan. China has a big interest there. They have an oil investment of great significance. It's being harmed by this. And the cooperation with the U.S. is pretty good. There are areas where we don't see eye to eye. They've been supplying and have an arms agreement with South Sudan. We have not supplied any lethal arms equipment to South Sudan, even under the peace agreement, and certainly are not supplying any military assistance now. So we don't see entirely eye to eye, but we have shared objectives, and at this point the Chinese are very active.
Some people are already jumping the gun and saying that China is scrambling for South Sudan to take a prominent position there in terms of international relations. Do you subscribe to that notion?
Well, they've always been prominent between Sudan and South Sudan because the Chinese CNPC owns 40% of the Sudan-South Sudan oil industry. They built the pipeline. They have big shares in the production. So they have a stake in it. When I was the envoy, worked with my Chinese counterpart. I accompanied Secretary Clinton to Beijing, where we had discussions about this 2 years ago, and we continue to do so. My successor meets frequently with his Chinese counterpart.
Given your history of dealing with the Chinese government, you visited them and you sat with your counterparts there, do you see some hidden agenda in Chinese interests in South Sudan?
I don't think it's a hidden agenda. I think China faces a difficult question. The Chinese policy has always been in Africa. We don't get involved in internal affairs. We don't tell a country how to run its politics. We don't pay attention to human rights issues. We are there as investors and diplomatic representatives. But in a case like this, where the civil war is going on, China cannot help be concerned with what it will take to end the civil war. And what it will take to end the civil war is a major political agreement and transformation. So this is, in a sense, new territory for China. Right now, they're counting on the African mediation to address most of these issues.
Talking about a new territory for China, how does China's engagement with South Sudan play out with South Sudan's traditional friends, the U.S., the Dutch, the British, and the French?
Well, the Chinese were very helpful, particularly the company, in helping resolve the issues between Sudan and South Sudan over oil. You may recall that during 2012, South Sudan shut down its production altogether in a dispute with Sudan over the pipeline fees and other economic arrangements. And in the long, complicated negotiations to resolve that, the Chinese company was very, very helpful. Where we don't see eye to eye with China is we continue to be arms suppliers, both to Sudan and South Sudan. We don't think that's helpful. And China doesn't want to get deeply involved in the details of the negotiations. But as a member of the Security Council, we count on China to back the Africans in what they decide, and when they come to the Security Council and ask for support, that we will all provide that support.
And with these new moves by China into South Sudan, is there a cause for worry by, say, the United States?
No, it's not a new injury. They've been in Sudan, South Sudan, for more than a decade when Western oil companies left Sudan, China, Malaysia, and India stepped in and developed the industry. So they've been there a long time. No, we don't see this as a problem. We think China can be very helpful, and we hope we can get, on the same page with regard to arms, with regard to supporting the mediation process, and bringing peace to South Sudan. I think we're looking to China to be an important colleague in this effort.
That's Princeton Lyman, the senior advisor to the President of the United States Initiative of Peace. He also served as a U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Cameroon says it must move tens of thousands of Nigerians and Central Africa Republic refugees to camps run by aid groups. That story is coming up.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is it possible for government-run radio and television to carry objective news?
I think they can, but usually the private televisions or radios are the ones that do better, because I don't know if it's the government that try to restrict them a bit, or maybe they're just a bit afraid. But usually the government-run radios or TVs don't really give much information.
For me, I feel it's difficult because in the first place, the station is already owned by government. The staff are paid, the salaries are paid by government, and everything there is paid by government. And in this African setting, we know very well that most government tend to show an ugly eye on someone who wants to be objective.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Sierra Leone launches a new campaign today to try to contain the spread of the Ebola virus. Initial report describing the effort as a nationwide lockdown were wrong. Instead, the campaign is called House to House Ebola Talk. Nyack Alexander is the World Health Organization spokesperson in Sierra Leone. From the capital Freetown, she spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua about the new campaign.
It will be launched today with a speech from the president, and he's going to ask people to be at home for the next 3 days, so Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, so that they're there when the sensitization groups come around, when the community groups come around to talk to them about Ebola. So the plan is the team will have the local health worker and a couple of people that were nominated by the community, who are from the community, who will have the training on Ebola, as in symptoms, how to protect yourself, what to do if somebody is sick, and then they'll be able to give that information as well as answer questions.
How many homes do they hope to reach?
Well, the government says they hope to reach 100% of homes, but WHO has trained up some monitors. These are the kinds of monitors that go around in vaccination campaigns as well. So 100 monitors have been trained up, and they'll be spot-checking about 24,000 homes so they can get an idea of how many homes are reached in the campaign. But it's not just the door-to-door as well. Radio shows are really getting in on the program as well, and they'll be doing special call-ins. They'll have guests on so they can continue to spread the message. So even if a home is not visited by these community teams, the family also has a chance to get more information on Ebola if they turn on their radio that day.
Now, this is countrywide, right? It is not just in the capital.
That's right. Supposed to be every single household, every district, every part of the country, even the hard-to-reach sections.
That's a pretty ambitious project considering Sierra Leone has a population of about 6 million.
You're right. It is ambitious. And so that's why we're saying you might as well aim high. The goal is very good. The idea of bringing people from the community to be more engaged in the fight against the Ebola virus is very important. And the idea that the communities themselves should be involved, that it can't be something that goes down from elsewhere, but the communities themselves need to be the ones asking the questions. If nothing else, just the fact that the campaign is happening is helpful. And it's not unprecedented here. They had a stay-at-home prayer and reflection in early August, which went very well. It was very smooth. People did stay home. It's not enforced. People are allowed to leave their homes after hours to go get water and other vitals. They're allowed to be around their homes. They're just not supposed to go out and travel and congregate. It's really to stay home, listen to the radio, so you can talk about Ebola.
Let me ask you about the response in Sierra Leone. From the WHO's viewpoint, what's going right? What's going wrong?
The right things are being done. You just need more of it. The burial teams are trained. The burial teams are doing exactly what they need to do, but there's not enough of them. They need more vehicles. They need more support. They need more people trained up. More treatment centers are needed. Contact tracing is the exact right thing to do. You need to follow up if somebody has been sick, see how many other people were potentially exposed. There aren't enough people doing contact tracing as well. Not to paint too gloomy a picture, though, there are encouraging signs. Cuban and Chinese healthcare workers have arrived this week. The UK has promised further support for this country to help build and supply up to 700 more Ebola beds. That's all pointing in the right direction. It's no single body acting alone that can do it. It's the continued efforts of the government, WHO, UNICEF, MSF, and other partners that are on the ground as well.
Nyeka Alexander is the World Health Organization spokesperson in Sierra Leone from the capital, Freetown. She spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. Cameroon says tens of thousands of refugees from Nigeria and the Central African Republic must all be moved to camps run by international aid agencies. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde, the Cameroon government says it can no longer cope with the needs of the 300,000 foreigners.
As more Central Africans flee carnage in their country and Nigerians continue to escape Boko Haram terrorist attacks, Cameroon's government says their health, humanitarian and food needs have exceeded its capacity to cope. Minister of Territorial Administration, René Emmanuel Sadi, says he has instructed Cameroon's 10 regional governors to make sure refugees go to camps where they can have follow-up aid from the international community.
Les autorités administratives s'emploient à faire en sorte que toutes ces masses de
He says all administrative authorities have been instructed to relocate all refugees who are now in camps close to the borders with Nigeria and the Central African Republic. He says allowing the refugees to live in border villages with local Cameroon citizens is making it harder to control security as well as attend to their food and medical needs. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees representative to Cameroon, Ndeye Nzuguntur, tells VOA her organization is also struggling with the constant inflow of displaced people scattered all along the border. She says 42,000 Nigerian refugees have come across in the last month alone, and they are being asked to settle at a camp in Minawau, North Cameroon.
francophone forage dans le site. Nous allons commencer à...
She says the refugees need at least 20 more water wells on the site, and they can only construct 5, and that they have contacted the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, to build latrines, adding that they have already put up 100 tents that can contain 500 people. Cameroon says while it understands refugees have preferred to live in border areas, that is leaving both the refugees and Cameroon citizens more insecure from attacks by insurgents, and it is also creating unhealthy conditions. Sanusi Abdul, a spokesperson for the Nigerian refugees, says they have accepted the move to the Minawao camp while they wait for the situation at home to improve.
I'm very grateful for the president of Cameroon to do this favor for us. And we are very grateful to the entire people of this very town too, to keep us in a safe place with security, everything. So we are very happy, and we are now waiting for anything that the government does, we are okay.
In July, Cameroon asked for international assistance as the number of refugees had doubled since January. Earlier this week, the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, appealed for $34 million in donations to help Nigerians who had been forced to flee Boko Haram attacks, most of whom have landed in Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The U.S. Congress is set to give final approval to a plan to arm and train certain Syrian rebels who are trying to overthrow President Bashar al-Assad and defeat Islamic State militants. The Republican-controlled House of Representatives approved the legislation yesterday. The Senate, controlled by President Barack Obama's Democratic Party, is expected to easily approve the measure today. Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko went before a joint session of the U.S. Congress in Washington today to plead for help in facing down a Russian-backed insurgency in the eastern part of his country. In a nearly hour-long speech, Mr. Poroshenko gave an impassioned case for U.S. intervention in the Ukrainian conflict. And finally, voters are heading to the polls across Scotland today for a historic referendum that will decide whether the country leaves its 307-year-old union with England and becomes an independent state. Turnout for the referendum is expected to be high, since more than 4.2 million people registered to vote. Recent polls put supporters of the union ahead by 4 to 5 percentage points. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And that brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Zawaj Ghali by Sultan Clinton.
Madam Taisi mo Susanna ina gini sawa eh mudar pasena samana tazawaja madam tai tala uru api beto mon gali abutona ni oh dunia ana bia mulusu oh madam tai futu
ruskan mafa Zawaja mafi fitini hey,
Anagini dugu telefon tabeto mon Anagumuru afibeta butongo Kalita derushono Anakelimu gali Anaderu Suzana tai Aina na pegarena Anakelimu gurus mafi Zawaja diga gali Anabamulu sunu Mama Urusha makifaya Maradero ana Abuto gali kalama mafi Anabamulu sunu
Kana saninja kawajaja mojira mbara de beser tamam lakini karine ajaja aju zidu 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 garami tala ni charta kira tu bitala bien uncle de gurusto mama de gurusto ara bida mojira de beser
mana bamulo shunu oh ya mama kusha makifaya mara de ruana aputo kali kalama fi mana bamulo shunu oh ya mama ana biya salu oh ya papa aputo
We have been listening to Sultan Clinton, a US-based South Sudanese musician, with that song Zawaj Ghali. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.